When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
This episode is brought to you by Paramount Plus. Get in, loser! Mean Girls is now streaming on Paramount Plus. Join Katie Heron as she meets the plastics and Tina Fey's new twist on the modern classic. Get ready for more of the rumors, backstabbing, and jokes you loved from the original movie with some fetch surprises. Rated PG-13. Wear pink and head to ParamountPlus.com to try it free.
What's going on, everybody? Hope you are having a wonderful week so far. Before we get into it, I have a Discord chat. Group, whatever you want to call it. Get involved. The link is in the description. We talk all things podcast, music. I give away free stuff. All of the good shit. And if you listen to this regularly, I would love it if you subscribed. Just means that we can just keep going with this podcast. And the more subscribers, the more listens, the more likely we can get bigger guests on. It really, really does help. Also, reviews. Give us some reviews. I'd love you for that. That'd be great. Thank you very much. I'll stop asking you for shit now and I'll give you some shit. So Akraes is on the podcast this week. He was 2021, Do It To It, biggest record of the year. Still one of the biggest records in tech house. It's done nearly a billion streams in a few years, which is mental. I think it's probably done over a billion streams in total, but even just a billion, I think it's like 750,000 on Spotify alone. It's crazy. This guy's life just got turned upside down when this record came out, and I wanted to catch up with him and see how he dealt with it, see how he dealt with the pressure of coming out of it. I met him at EDC Vegas this year for the first time. He's a lovely guy, really, really nice guy. I'm really interested in what he's done and his before he released House, started releasing House music, what his career was doing. Really interesting story. Without further ado, the one and only Akraes. What's cooking, man?
What's good, baby? How you doing?
Yeah, good, man. Good. I've always tried to work this out. How do you actually pronounce your artist name?
I mean, it can go two ways. It could go two ways. So it's either Akraes or Akraes, but most people say Akraes because it's, you know, I think it rolls off the tongue easier.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm going to sneeze. Oh, I lost a sneeze. That's the fucking worst when that happens, man. That is the worst.
I hate that it happens all the time.
Akraes. Okay, cool. So I've been saying it right the whole time. I didn't know if it was like Akraes.
Yeah, I mean, people say that too, but like,
what
I don't
do you
really
say?
Use that name.
What do you say?
Akraes.
Akraes. Okay.
Yeah. There you go. Perfect.
Akraes. Done.
But I feel like if you're like from London or if you're from Australia, a lot of people will say Akraes. Like, that's like the normal the over crates. There. Like, I hear that all the time. That's usually where I only hear it.
Yeah. A crate, yeah. Where did it come from? You've been asked this. This is the most basic question as well. So you've probably been asked this a million times, but I'm just intrigued. So I apologize.
I mean, everyone has a story to their artist name, you know?
But I don't. Mine was, I don't at all. Know. No,
was that is your real name?
Pretty much, yeah.
What's your? I don't want to ask your actual government name, but I feel like
my actual government name is David. But,
really?
But nobody calls me David. Not even my parents.
So where did Will come from?
So Will, my full name is David William Matthew Clark.
Gotcha.
And so they, my parents, my dad's name's David, but my parents called me, wanted to call me Will, but they didn't want my initials to be WC, water closet, toilet. So they just put my dad's name at the front.
Wait, so what's the deal behind WC? Because I never understood it. Like, what does it stand for?
Water closet.
Water closet.
Yeah.
Wow. I was trying to figure this out while I was in tour on Europe. I'm like, what the fuck does it stand for? And I, honestly, I'm so stupid. I didn't Google it, but I'm just like, what does this mean?
Yeah, because you don't have it. Do you use it in America, WC?
No, we just use restroom.
Restroom, yeah. We don't use restroom at all.
Yeah, it's very weird.
Toilet and restroom.
But yeah, going back to what you're saying, so at craze came from when I used to be in high school, or when I was in high school, I started DJing. Like, I wasn't actually DJing, but like I wanted to be a DJ. So my friend was like, we were like graduating from high school or whatever. Yeah. And the night of the graduation, he was like, yo, you should like try to spin something. I'm like, well, I don't have any equipment. And he was just like, well, you can figure it out. So I like looked up on Google how to like do it on your computer.
Yeah.
So I found like this mixer. It's called Mixer with an R at the end. It's like mix and then with an R and then .com. And it's just like, you can like mix and use the knobs with your mouse.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how I figured it out that night. And then like at the end of the night, people called me DJ Caution because there was like a caution tape.
Okay.
They like wrapped me in it. And so I was called DJ Caution for a while. And so after a while, I was just like, if I'm going to like, cause my, you know, my dreams and aspirations were to go play Ultra and play Tomorrowland. I'm like, I can't be called DJ Caution if I'm going to play this shit. So eventually I looked up the synonyms of Akraze, or I mean of DJ Caution. It was an Akraze was like the first thing that popped up. So I was like, this is it.
I like the DJ name DJ Caution. It sounds like some like Chicago ghetto tech DJ.
Yeah, for sure.
I met DJ Hyperactive this weekend for the first time.
Really?
And I was like starstruck.
I've seen a few videos from him.
Yeah, just like there's some people, right, that you meet and you're just like, damn, I've literally played your music my whole, like, you're one of the reasons why we do it. And the crazy thing is that there's a lot of these, like, old school guys that just people don't know about. And, like, they're still touring. They're still doing their thing. But it's, like, because they're not good at social media and they're not interested in, like, doing what you have to do to be a successful touring DJ nowadays, they're just like kind of in the background, and it's weird. It's strange to me that's how the industry is.
I feel like a lot of the older heads are just really neglective towards social media, but because like I feel like they were never brought up on it, and it's like, I don't know, I feel like it kind of reminds me of like my parents. Like, your parents never want to listen to you when it's like, you know, I'm like, yo, what do you think? Or like, you know, if I bring up a new idea that they're like pretty unheard of, or if like they don't know what it is, they're like pretty like insecure because they don't know what it is and they don't want to do it. They're like, fuck that. I don't give a shit about that. Like, I never grew up on that.
Yeah.
So it's, I don't know. I feel like it kind of like reflects on like the DJ scene as well. But
are you like that about anything in your career?
I would say I like to be a sponge when I need to be.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I want to know as much knowledge as I can.
Yeah.
So I'm not really like neglective when it comes to like someone teaching me something. Like, if someone knows more than me and I'm aware of it, you know, I'm not going to be like, oh, you know, and be a dick about it, you know, not learn, because I want to learn everything, you know, whether it's business, music, any sort of education. I think like it's good to be knowledgeable in all those things.
I agree. is there anything in this industry that you like struggle with, as of like you're like, oh fuck, I've got to do this now?
At this moment now, it's probably flighting, or like flights and like flying.
Yeah.
Because just from like the get-go of Do It To It and like that whole era of 2021, I started like touring super, super fucking hard.
Yeah.
And like, I think in 2022, we almost did like almost 200 shows or 180 or something like that. So right off the bat, I was just crushing touring like really hard.
Yeah.
I was partying as well. So like the partying really fucked me up and I'm really paying for it now. And like the hangovers are just really, really intense for me. Like the anxiety, you know, the anxiety after drinking, or man, it's just been, it's been tough. And like, I'm starting to get like this fear of flying, but,
really,
which I've never had. Yeah. I've never had before.
But what's the fear?
I don't know. Just crashing.
Really? Interesting.
Which, you know, which a lot of people say, like, you know, you're safer in the air than you are in a car or something, you know?
I've spoken to a few people about this though, and yes, you are technically safer, right? However, you're completely powerless.
Yeah.
Like if that plane's going down,
you're done.
It's game over. Like how many people walk out of a plane crash? Like not many.
I think there's been one person. I think there's actually, I tried to look this up and I'm pretty sure I remember seeing an article about a guy who survived and made billions of dollars.
Yeah.
Like insane.
It's very slim. Whereas like car crashes, like a lot of people have car crashes, and you know, so many people that have had car crashes that just walk out of them.
Yeah. Some fly, you know, some survive, you know, by a fucking hair on their ass, or some people just like walk away, you know, it's the same thing.
I think for me, that's the thing why it doesn't bother me flying, is because I'm just like, I'm gone. If this goes down, I'm gone, and there's nothing I can do about it. So it's like trying not to worry about things that I'm completely powerless over, because I have no control.
Yeah, that's true.
Do you think it's the drinking though that makes it like that?
I think so. Yeah. Well, it's just like a, you know, when you do something so much over time, I feel like it's like, so I've been sober for about a month now, just like not drinking. Yeah. And it's been probably the best choice I've made in a long, long time.
Yeah.
Because just being able to wake up, like, you know, when you text me, I was already up. I walked the dog, and like, I'm in a schedule now. Like I love a routine where I can wake up. I just moved into a new house, so I can't wait to build my studio.
Yeah.
It's hopefully going to look like yours, you know, but, I just love a good routine, man, where I'm just like, you know, on schedule with things. And when I'm like drinking or like, you know, touring super, super hard, which I'm still touring a lot, but like, I'm not drinking at shows now.
Yeah.
Like I hate waking up the next day and like not being able to like perform when my team's like calling me about meetings or something like that. I'm like, oh, I'm too fucked up. Like, you know, I don't want to go through that anymore. So
I think it's like, it's a good realization this early on though, because there's a lot of people that like, you've had obviously huge amount of success over the last couple of years, like more than what most people would ever achieve in their career. And I think most people can just kind of keep going and going and don't realize to make a change in their life 10 years down the line. And it's almost too late, if that makes sense.
For sure. I mean, we've both seen many DJs go down fast, bro. So it's smart that I'm doing this now, you know, I'm taking care of my body and stuff now.
Yeah, man. Do you train and stuff?
I do go to the gym. Yeah. So I've been going for about like 3-4 times, or trying to go 3-4 times a week now. But I do want to get into like MMA and like boxing and stuff.
Yeah. I used to kickbox. I grew up kickboxing when I was a kid.
Really?
Yeah, it was like, for me, like rugby and kickboxing was like the thing.
And you're short, right?
Yeah, I'm short as fuck.
How tall are you?
5'3".
Wow, so you're like, you're perfect size for like an MMA fighter.
Yeah, or like bodybuilding. Like, lifting. Yeah, but yeah, for me, like kickboxing was, I did it from age of like, I think like 7 to like 18. I loved it, man. I'd love to go back to it, and I'd love to do the like MMA side of thing. But for me, it's just finding time.
What got you into music? Because like I remember, so a funny story. It was like when I first started getting into like house music.
Yeah.
My manager was like, "Yo, Will Clark's coming to play a show here in Orlando. You should come see him." And I'm like, I didn't have anything to do at that time, and this is when I first started getting into house music because I was really trying to learn it.
Yeah.
And so he brings me to the show, and we see you like I don't think I met you, but I was just watching you, and it was just a really, really good set. And
where was that?
I think it's Celine.
Celine, yeah. 2020?
Yeah.
Yeah, I did All Night Long. Yeah, I remember that.
Oh, that's right, yeah. Mm. I saw your set there, and it was really good, man.
Thanks.
Really, really good. Props to you, but
yeah, how did I get into it? It's been such a long thing. I started doing like local discos, like weddings and stuff like that, like when I was like 9 years old. And then I learned how to DJ when I was 12, 13. Like I learned how to mix. Went to this, there used to be an academy in the UK called the DJ Academy, and they would tour around different cities. So that you do like a 10-week course, and it was mostly like adults. I was like this like weird 12-year-old. I think it was like in between my 12th and 13th birthday. And you'd learn to mix, but you'd also learn how to like promote yourself as an artist and everything like that. So it was kind of like a 10-week course of like everything. And then at the end of that course, you would all like put a night on at the place where you were learning and like have a party. So my first set was like when I was 13 in a club.
Jeez.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
And then just from there on, I lived in Ibiza for some years, like doing seasons as residents, and just kind of took it from there, really.
You were doing it that young in Ibiza?
My first show in Ibiza was when I was 16.
Holy shit.
And then my first residency in Ibiza was when I was just literally like, the day after my 18th birthday was my first residency in Ibiza.
That's crazy, man.
Yeah, so and I've been doing it a while. 33.
Jeez, you've been doing it for a while.
Yeah, I'm going to retire soon, mate. Give up.
No.
How old are you?
I'm 28.
Sick, man. It's a good age. It's a good age in this industry, man.
If Tiesto can do it at 50-something, sky's the limit at this point for you and I.
Yeah, right. Yeah. What did you start? Obviously, you didn't start with house. I'm aware that you didn't start with house. What like genre were you in then? Went before Do It To It?
I was in like dubstep and trap. I
thought so.
Yeah. And I was making like Jersey Club for a minute, which is like a very underground kind of like
Jersey Club. I love Jersey Club.
Yeah. Jersey Club is fire. And that's how I got recognized first. By like Skrillex, Flash Adamas, 4B, a few other guys.
Because you were touring pretty regularly before Do It To It came out, right?
Yeah, I was doing probably like, I don't know, like 25 shows a year, maybe. Okay. It was probably like 2 or 3 shows a month.
Yeah.
And I got into, or when quarantine hit, like that's when I like started to make the transition because I was really starting to like, really get into house music and like learning like the old underground stuff because I was really in love with sampling at the time. And so like during quarantine I was just making so much house music that I was just like so in love with it that I just didn't want to go back to like making dubstep or trap.
Yeah.
And I felt like there was like kind of like a downward spiral with the dubstep scene and the whole hard dance music scene, so like I kind of just, I don't know. I was just like, I risked it all. You know, I didn't really care if I lost fans or if I lost anybody. I was just truly just in love with, you know, making the house music shit, man. It was just learning the consistency of like, you know, just a whole set. And
yeah,
I don't know, man. It was just, I love where I am now. So
it's quite a ballsy move to just be like, fuck it.
Yeah, man. But you know what they say, you know, like the biggest risks are, you know, the most rewarding. So,
yeah. It's crazy that because it's also such a, it's not, the like dubstep and trap scene is so different to the house scene, right? Yeah. Even just like longevity in of like the history, especially the like trap scene in America. Like, there's not really a trap scene from what I, from an outsider's point of view, I know nothing about trap, so please correct me if I'm wrong. But like, there's not really a trap scene outs. Is there a trap scene outside of America?
I would say there isn't. Yeah. You know, like, if you really look at like the industries, like I say this all the time, like, or I even know just from like hearing what people say, like, you know, there's not a lot of DJs that are in the dubstep scene that come play in Europe, unless it's like Perukaville or like just like a Tomorrowland almost.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
But like, no one's really doing those kind of shows. Like, house music just rules the world. Like, yeah. Let's just put that there. You know, like techno, tech house, house music. It's so universal that it's just worldwide everywhere. I don't think there's outside of the US, dubstep and trap, that's where it lives. You know, that's where it stays.
Yeah. Cause I spoke to Troy Boy quite a few times, and I know he does like a bit of, I don't really know what he does as a, like, I love his music, but I don't really know. But obviously he's from the UK, and we spoke about it quite a few times of like just never playing in the UK because his sound is just not, there's just nowhere in the UK that plays what he listens to, what he makes.
You know where else it is big though is Asia.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Asia's huge with like that all that sense. Type of music, man. It's crazy.
Why is that? Like, EDM was massive in China. It still is.
Yeah, it still is. But for some reason, bro, I don't know what it is, but like every time I go there, there's always an opener before me playing some sort of trap and dubstep song. And like, it's like, fucking Christ, bro. You can't run away from it here. It's just...
did you have an issue with that? Like, when you... With the whole, like, from... Did you release after... Sorry, my questions are fucking terrible right now. I can't even...
Hold on, before you say anything, do you mind if I use the bathroom really fast?
Go for it, man. Yeah, go for it.
Thank you, bro.
Yeah, from going from trap to dubstep, was the, like, transition hard to, like, tell people that you've changed? Or was it just... Was Do It To It the first record that you came out after that in-house?
Yeah. I'm pretty sure it was.
So you don't... You don't need to tell anyone. Everyone's, because you've just gained so many new fans that just, it doesn't fucking matter, does it?
Well, here's the funny thing though. Like, so before, when I was making all that type of music, so I had released a song. I was actually making house, but I wasn't like really in tune with it when I made Do It To It. But I made Funky Town, which got released on Mercer's label.
Okay.
And then I had a record that came out on Confessions with Mala on his mixtape. Mm-hmm. It was called Marco Polo. And then I did a remix for DJ Snake's album, and it got released on his remix album or whatever.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I was making house in between all these, you know, dubstep and trap records that I was putting out. So it wasn't like out of the ordinary. It wasn't out of the blue, because I was kind of like teasing it a little bit. Mm. But it wasn't intentional. Like, I wasn't trying to say like, oh, I'm about to move, but you know, just one day I just got sick of it and just wanted to make something new. So, but it wasn't really tough, but it was just, everyone was kind of confused.
Yeah.
Cause I didn't really like come out and say like, hey, I'm done. You know, I was just, you know, kind of like posting just me playing all house sets, and people were like, oh fuck, he's switching now. Yeah. So like, you know, eventually like, some people would come to my shows early on before Do It To It and be like, yo, where's all these records? Why aren't you playing these anymore? And everyone was just kind of confused. And then I think I did make a story post, if I'm not wrong, though. I don't remember, but yeah, man. I mean, it was the best decision I could have made.
Oh, 100%. You know? 100%. Because I remember listening to Do It To It when it first came out, and just like scrolling through your profile. Because obviously, like, I'm not in the dubstep or trap community. I was like, who the hell is this dude? Like, making this record has blown the fuck up. And I was going through it, I was like, ah, interesting that he's like not making much house music at all. It was like, it was a ballsy move, and I was like, fair play. Like, obviously at that time, what year did it come out, 21 or 22?
21.
So like, yeah. 21 was like coming out of pandemic time, and tech house was just like the hottest new thing in America at that time. It was like, you had like John Summit, you had Dom Dollar, you had Chris, you had Fish, and then you had you doing Do It To It. And it was just like everywhere. Like, how does your life change?
Dude, I was playing some of the smallest shows I've could have possibly played early on in my career, to playing really like really insane slot times, really insane clubs, selling out shows really early on. I mean, I'm pretty sure like 3/4 of my touring in 2022 was just like pretty much sold out shows. So it was really insane.
Yeah.
But it's truly life-changing, man. Like when they say like one record can really change your life, it really does.
Yeah.
And I was so naive in learning how to, like, it took me so long to put out a record after. It took me almost a year. Mm-hmm. Because like I was so like scared to put something out and it, like, kind of failing, which at the time I was kind of like saying like, oh, fuck it, you know, I don't care, whatever, you know, I was saying something else. But truly in your mind, it's like, any artist knows that like the follow-up is what really matters.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. What was the follow-up?
It was a record with Good Boys.
Yeah.
Called Believe. It was an interpolation of Miracle.
Yeah.
By
Toka's Miracle. That one.
Yeah, Toka's Miracle, yeah.
That's a classic. So
it was cool. I mean, it's a really good record. It went gold in a few countries, but for me, it just wasn't like, it wasn't the right move. And so now I'm kind of restructuring my whole thought process. I'm making music. So the last release I just put out was like really just like something I really wanted to put out for a while. Cause I got into a label deal, and like, if you know music and you know labels, you know how that, you know, a lot of people can be very like pursue, you know, everyone's like all about the money. There's a lot of money involved. People want to get paid. And it's just like, it kind of like straight, you know, I basically had to like almost pull Kanye West and be like, yeah, this is it. Like I gotta figure this out.
So, okay. So let's, I kind of, and I know you've spoke about this a lot because it blew up, but I want to kind of go into like more depth of what you're saying is like what you went through mentally for that, and kind of what was being put on the table in front of you, and things you just were like, I can't turn this down because I've never had these offers before, etc., etc. So Do It To It comes out, it blows the fuck up, record labels come to you and ask for try and sign you as a major record labels, correct?
Yeah.
And then how long do they lock you in for?
So this is kind of what happened, or this is what I'm in right now. So I had Do It To It, and I really wanted just to put it out because I had so many DJs playing it. Like, there was a ton of DJs getting support or supporting it. So I brought it to this record label, Thrive.
Yeah.
Which I'm not sure if you're familiar with them.
I know Thrive, yeah.
Okay, so yeah, I brought it to them. They released it after a while, probably like a month or two later. You know, Capital, who is a major, wanted to do like a conjoined deal where they kind of help Thrive and, you know, they just kind of make a massive team.
Upstream it.
Yeah. So I pretty much signed for something around like 18 songs or so.
Jesus.
Yeah. So we've been through.
I hope they gave you so much fucking money.
And you know, like I think that's what like the naive person,
of course, yeah,
would have done. And
I think everybody does this, right?
Yeah,
like
of course.
And I, especially that people have had a record blow up that quickly, so early on in like a new genre of their career, right? You had a successful career beforehand, but like, yeah, these things happen, man.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, it's funny. I was at a show, or DJ Snake had invited me to a show, and this was in New York before the release of Do It To It. And there's a video that I was like posting about how he was like, he brought me out on stage. He's just like, this is the biggest record of the year. Like, it's not even released yet. Like the guy. That. And so, I was at a show and he was just like, listen, I'm going to give you some advice. Do not ever, 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 ever sign a record deal. And I'm like, you know, I kind of knew you were going to say that, but like, you can't tell me something like that. Like, and you're where you're at.
Yeah.
Like you had to do the same. I'm pretty sure you signed a record deal when you were early on. He's like, yeah, but I'm just, you know, giving you advice, you know, yada, yada, yada. But I was just like, listen, there's no one around me that's going to help me and give me like the whole reason of signing a record deal is obviously to get like money and like, you know, to get like stuff for your project to build the you know, the kind of future that you want.
Yeah.
And so like, you know, there wasn't anyone around me to give me advice. You know, he obviously gave me some slim advice, but like me and my manager were just very new to everything.
Yeah, yeah.
My manager was getting hit up by like every manager in the world, Shalizi, Scooter Braun, and like, yeah, he's on his own thing. And I'm like dealing with my side of the thing. And so like, it was just like, there was so much happening that we, yeah, didn't, you know, you have to make a bad decision.
Dude, I get it, man. And I think this is it's a really good conversation to have, because I think everybody at some point in their career has done something like that, right?
Yeah.
And it's like I don't know how much I can talk about it, but with like, I know Chris Lake did an awful deal at some point in his career. And
yeah, I think I heard about this.
Yeah, and like that wasn't just a record deal. That was like a 360 deal. So like, that was back in the day when people would take touring money. So like, you have to go through those deals to then come out the other side of it and go, fuck that.
Yeah.
Or, but the thing is, on the other side of that, on counter to that, some people sign deals and they're amazing deals and they have great relationships with the label and they have amazing careers out of that.
You know what it is? Like my label, both of them are great people. I will say they're very easy to work with, you know, just like, yeah, everything, but there's just a lot of cooks in the kitchen,
yeah,
that I just, you know, sometimes feel like, you know, I kind of get pushed away from my true artistry.
Yeah.
And I think like now, you know, I'm really just like honing in on like, you know, I think like the thing is just, I really want to put out club records, yeah, more than I do like commercial stuff.
Yeah.
But I've kind of made a choice recently, and I told my manager and my team that I'm probably going to start working on an album within the next month or so.
Sick.
And so my goal is to like kind of go back to the do it to it sound.
Yeah.
And like kind of like see what I can like combine as far as like, yeah, you know, do it to it is obviously a sample. Do something more new age where I can bring like just like different artists that people wouldn't think to put on like a tech house song or something, yeah, like, yeah, that, but like really just hone in on like the tech house sound and go back to like my roots,
yeah,
that I kind of like blew up on, you know, so say.
Totally. Makes sense,
man. So I guess like, yeah, it's gonna be really tasteful stuff that I feel like I honestly like the whole album, I want people to remix it. So like it kind of stays in the scene of, you know, where I'm at, because like if I go too commercial and it's just like all this other things, I don't want to end up like a David Guetta, no offense to him, but like he's just, you know, he's in a certain that like is really dope, but I just don't see myself there. I don't want to be too mainstream. Like I love the underground. Like I love playing underground shows, man. There's something about it.
Well, I think that's the thing as well, is like, sorry to butt in, but you, like in comparison to what David Guetta did, like David Guetta for like 10 years was in the underground. Like,
yeah.
And I guess you haven't experienced that side of it in house music, because you just, your pretty much first record, it nearly did 1 billion streams and was the biggest record of the year at that time and still is one of the biggest records. Whereas like Guetta, just, it took him so long to get to where he's at that it makes sense why he's where he's at now. It's like, it's a machine. It's a money machine. But especially, yeah, I mean, with you being so young.
Say that again. He's super smart too. Yeah. Yeah. He's super smart with how he does things, man. It's crazy. Like I respect him so much, man. I mean, I met him a few times, really cool guy.
Same with Tiesto, right?
Same thing with Tiesto.
I remember the first time me seeing Tiesto, it was when he played Trance and I was 18 years old in Ibiza. And so this was a long time ago, and he had still sold. He was doing, it's a Privilege in Ibiza. I don't know if you've heard of Privilege, but it wasn't open this season.
I have.
Yeah. So when it was like popping off years ago, they'd fit like 12,500 people in there. And he did like three shows in the summer of like sold out 12,500 people in Privilege just to see him. And he was like still the biggest thing. And this was like 15 years ago. Wow. And you're just like, he's been doing it for that long, that bit. He's been that big for that long.
That's insane. The fact that he can hold that, like that crown for so long is really nuts.
It's mental. And then you look at like Eric Prydz, right? And it's the same thing for him. It's like, I know it took him, he's gone a bit different. He's way more underground than those boys. But like, there is longevity in this industry if you're willing to just keep working at it.
Funny story about Eric is, so I was playing a show in Saudi Arabia. It's called Middle Beast.
Yeah.
It's like the only show that happens there, I guess, or whatever. There's a festival. I'm sure you've heard of it.
Yeah.
But I was playing and Eric was playing right after me, and my, I'm like playing like one of my last songs, and Eric like kind of like walks up next to me and he's like, you know, plugging in his SD card. My photographer slaps his hand. He's like, get the fuck off the stage. And I'm like, and I look at Eric, I'm like, I'm so sorry. I was like, Tom, what are you fucking doing, bro? My photographer is just a, you know, he doesn't know anything about the scenes. He doesn't know anything.
I love that, like, though. That's cool.
Yeah, me too. You know, it's funny because like he'll have moments where like he doesn't know anyone and he's like, who is this guy? I'm like, or there was this one time I was in Ibiza playing before Martin Garrix.
Yeah.
And Martin comes up to me and he's just like, yo, like you're crushing it, you know, we just started chatting or whatever. And then he looks at see all your photos on Instagram and he's like, from Charlie, and like they all look so sick. And he's like, thank you, man. You know, Martin walks away. He's like, and Tom, my photographer, he's like, who's this guy? I'm like, that's Martin Garrix, dude. It's so funny.
I love the naivety though. That's what keeps people fresh. I like that.
Hey man, you know, like he comes from like a very different scene. So
yeah. Did you keep everybody on your team from dubstep days?
Yeah,
that's great.
Everyone kept my manager, kept my tour manager. The only person that's new is Josh. So Josh is dating my original tour manager, Steph.
Yeah.
So Josh is his nickname is Panda.
Okay.
And he works with Gordo.
Why is his nickname Panda?
I don't know. I guess it's just something that he's always had.
Okay.
But he's worked with Carnage and for Carnage and through the whole Carnage project, and now he's with, you know, the Gordo project. But he's been working with DeMonte for like 10 years now. So. Yeah.
And what does he do for you?
He's a tour manager as well, but he also works as like kind of like almost a manager as well.
Yeah.
But Alex is my main manager, and then I have Tom, my photographer, and Matt, who is also my video guy.
That's dope, so, man.
Yeah, I've had everyone from the jump, and I don't know. I like it that way because I'm comfortable being myself. You know, like it's always awkward like meeting a new photographer and like you gotta like you don't know how their personality is, and then you like I don't know. It's cool when I can just like sit next to my photographer and like be on my phone. We don't have to talk.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like awkward.
Yeah.
You know, like, and we're just like, you know, we'll chat sometimes, or sometimes we'll have really long conversations. But yeah.
No, there's something about it, and also being able to like actually have somebody that's like full time just with you, it makes so much sense if you can afford it, right? Like that is the greatest thing, to be able to like have somebody that can always just be with you, because you just get consistency over your whole brand, which is so important as well.
Yeah, exactly.
You mentioned about an album. Obviously, by the time this comes, this isn't going to be out till next year. Heads up, I'm banking them up. So I have, by the time this comes out, people should know, but I'm releasing an album this year when this podcast comes out.
Really?
Yeah. I wrote it 2022, April 2022 to April 2023. And with, I kind of want to go back to the major thing, and what I did to, because I hadn't signed a deal. I was just like to my manager, I want to do something different. I want to do an album, and I want to kind of change how we do shows and stuff like that. So I wrote the album and then shipped and then fished it out. So then I didn't have to deal with A&Rs. So it was like, this is my album. You either like it or you don't. And if you want to sign it, sign it. If you don't want to sign it, sign it. How will you kind of deal with it with the label and A&Rs and everything like that?
I guess like...
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
It's going to be tough, man. I don't know. Cause like, you know, with the last record that we just put out, I think like they saw the creative process, you know, like, so I gave them the song. They were like, yeah, this is dope. But then I'm like, I sent them like photo shoots and like video ideas, yeah. You know, and like everything else. And they started to see the kind of like creation behind the song.
Yeah.
And they started to love it. You know, they That's started cool. to like really feel the energy behind it. So I think like, as each song goes on, I think like, as I make it, I really want to build a story behind it, build like a storyline. Cause I'm going to do it like kind of the Russ way. Yeah. I don't know if you know who Russ is, but he's one of the artists that like, he kind of like, he like, I guess released an album once.
Okay.
And every song was like, or every song that he had on the album, it was like 1 week he would drop one. Yeah. And then the next 3 weeks he would drop another one and then so on and so on. Okay. So he wouldn't drop a full album, yeah. You know? So he would give every song its own life and its own world and then move on to the next song.
You have to do that nowadays to a certain extent, don't you?
Yeah. I think it's just so people can pay attention and like, you know, cause you work so hard on it, you know, like on, for instance, like on your album, I'm sure you were on like all these different songs, like, and you don't want one to go under the radar, and because exactly. It could be your favorite song, you're like, yeah. Fuck, like I really love this song, you know what I mean?
So yeah, like, I think that's the thing as well. It's also like how nowadays works with streaming. It's not necessarily the fact that people that records get that the records don't perform because they're not good. It's they perform because they're not just not being like they're just people aren't being shown them, if you know what I mean, with yeah. algorithms and everything like that. And albums are a weird concept nowadays because we don't buy a CD and stick it in our car and listen to it for 3 months because it's the only CD we could afford at the time and just live with it, right? It's like we have at our fingertips, we have like every fucking music for free, pretty much. Let's be honest, it's pennies. So it's yeah. I guess it's like, yeah, I agree with an album, it has to be singles, all singles, and then hope for it.
I don't know. I'm still thinking about even doing it as a whole, but yeah. I'm pretty like set to go, because I think we're locking in a lot of sessions for November right now. So I wasn't supposed to play any shows in November because that's when I wanted to start working on it, but we ended up doing 3 shows, you know, because.
Saw the money,
when
baby.
Call, when third shows call, you just got to answer.
Saw
you
know? The money, baby.
And, you know, like, I feel like, because I want to try and do something where I'm, like, off the grid, but I feel like that's not going to work too well for me, because, like, flying people to where I'm at, like, you know, getting everyone to where I'm at, it's just going to be super tough, because, like, if I was to choose, I would want to go in the middle of nowhere, in Wyoming in yeah. like, you know, like a huge house or something like that, but it's just going to be too much. So I'm going to stick in Miami for a while, then go, I don't think I'm going to go to LA. I'm probably going to come to London because there's really good writers in London.
Yeah. You did a record with Paige.
I did. Yeah.
So I actually did a session with her whilst you guys were kind of writing the record together.
Yeah.
She's great.
Yeah, so pretty much Paul and her wrote the record and then just sent it over to me. I just kind of like, you know, just took everything over and went into a cabin one day and
did it.
I think it was like North Toronto and just finished it.
Sick. Yeah. She's got such a great voice. Really good voice. Yeah.
She's young too. I'm pretty
Super
sure.
Super young. Yeah, yeah. Like early 20s, I think. I think she's just signed,
you know what's funny?
She just signed a deal to EMI.
Oh, she did, right?
Yeah.
Is that a record label out in London?
Yeah, EMI is like a massive major label here.
I'm pretty sure I heard of it. I was like, damn.
I think EMI, who owned EMI? EMI Records.
A couple records.
Yes, Universal.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, Universal.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
That's big, man. Universal is such a good umbrella to be under.
Yeah, it's massive. Sorry, I cut you off before I said that she's signed a deal. What were you going to say? Can you remember?
I feel like it's what was I going to say, actually?
We're talking about album writing. Oh, coming out to London.
Yeah, I feel like I just want to come out to London. There's such great writers out there, man. I know one of my good friends, Paul Harris,
Paul's great.
He's a really good writer, man.
He's great.
It's awesome.
So, mate, come down. Let's come to the country. Where I live,
yeah.
I live in the middle of nowhere. But
do you really?
Yeah, yeah. I live in like countryside. Yeah.
I just want to come in. What do you got there? You got a subsequent 37 right there.
Sub 37. Minilog. They're kind of basic, like synths. But the Moog is so great. But I've got this thing that you put. It's a Russian drum machine. It's fucking amazing.
What kind of sounds come out of that thing?
Just like harsh. All my hats get made out of that, pretty much.
Man.
And then...
Probably crisp distortion on those hats.
Yeah, they're great. This thing down here, SH09, is like the synth before the SH101, like the classic bass line synth.
Oh, really?
Like everyone has. The SH101A there. Hardware's cool, but...
Do you ever use it often?
I do. I use this. This drum machine I use nearly every session. When I'm writing bass lines, I use this quite a lot. I want to get one more polyphonic synth that's like I can do some like really nice chords and pads with it, but they can also,
you know, which one I just got is the Jupiter X.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
That one's crazy, bro.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
You gotta look into that one. That one's sick.
Is that the sequential one?
Yes, I think so.
Yeah, they're fucking lush.
Yeah,
but I kind of want to get there's a Deckard's Dream. I think it's called Deckard's Dream.
What did you use for? I feel like I thought it was like a more analog sound because I was playing one of your records recently. I think it was Techno Tree.
Yeah.
Was that like a more analog sound or?
I think the synth. The bass line is the Moog.
Yeah, I could tell.
Yeah. It's just meaty.
Yeah, very meaty. I loved it though. It was a really good record.
Yeah, I want to get the Deckard's Dream Black. I think it's called Black Corporation Deckard's Dream. It's like I'll send you a link. It's fucking beautiful. Like,
yeah, send it to me. I want to see it.
Like a poly. It doesn't have keys, which is a bit weird to me. It's like more of a rack mount. But it's beautiful.
Wait, so it's a rack, it doesn't even have keys?
Yeah. Yeah, you gotta MIDI it up with another, like I just MIDI up through and control it off that.
Gotcha, yeah.
But yeah, it's beautiful. So Do It Till It comes out and your life completely changes. How does it affect your personal life?
You don't have time for nothing, bro.
Yeah.
Time for literally anything.
Yeah.
I mean, I was seeing my family, like, I think in 2022, I saw my family 3 times the whole year.
Jesus. Are they in Florida?
Yeah. They live here.
Damn.
So
how does that get to you though? How does that, cause you didn't have a gradual like career slow build and foundation build. And it's like, you literally went from like this to this.
Yeah. Man, where do I begin? I just feel like, you know, just you don't, no one's ever going to know what it feels like to be in a situation, or there's a few people, because like, I thought I could handle everything, but I really couldn't.
Yeah.
And it was just so all new to me, but everyone's always, you know, I remember I was always saying like before Do It Too came out, I'm like, fuck this, I don't want to be in the house no more. Like, I'm always here, like, you know, making music, and like, people don't really appreciate being home and being with your family until you're away from them for a long time.
Yeah.
And you're meeting people, and then like, you know, just like, I just felt super disconnected from everything, you know, not even regarding like the success that comes with everything. Like, I was really enjoying that as well, but like, there was no grounding to where, yeah, I was at. Like, I just felt like I missed home a lot, and like, just like, you know, seeing my family again was just like something I never thought I'd be happy, you know, doing. Cause like, my parents were never like on board with me being a DJ and producer. Mm. My dad was always like super strict about like, you need to get a fucking job, and, you know, you need to go to fucking college, you know, all this other shit. So I'm like, dude, I don't want to fucking go to college. Like, I want to do what I want to do, you know? So, yeah. Yeah, my parents, you know, when they started to see the success, and my parents were now, you know, they follow everything I do. My dad's always calling me, yo, I saw your show in Vegas, look fucking crazy. I need to go to one of them Vegas shows. And I'm like, well, come out here, motherfucker. I'm waiting for you. But I think seeing my family and shit was, is the best thing ever. But What was the question again? I kind of strayed away from it.
No, you kind of hit it. It was more so like, how does it affect your like personal life? Because your life, man, just completely changes. Yeah. And now you're like a few years into touring like crazy. Do you schedule time to like chill and like have a bit of a routine of like normal life?
I mean, yeah. I mean, when I'm home now, because like, I just got an apartment.
Yeah.
First time ever getting a house, so
because
I've been no, I didn't buy it. So I'm in an apartment right now, so yeah. I'm gonna wait a little bit to start buying houses because the market isn't too great right now. But I'll wait a little bit, probably like in the beginning of next year, maybe.
Nice.
Or like towards the end of the next year or this year. But I've been living with my parents since I was a kid. Sick. And never moved out.
Really? So is this your first time moving out?
Well, so the thing is, when I first started making music and they were pretty neglective about it, I ran away. So yeah. I don't know if that's kind of a move out, but like, I had to go live with another friend who was actually in Akrais at one point. Then like we never made like, it just never worked out. Yeah, let's just put it that way. I'm still friends with him, but he was supposed to do like vocals and stuff, and it just wasn't. Akrais is just more of a producer DJ thing. It's not really meant to be a group. So yeah. I saw that early on, which is, you know, good. And I moved on from it. But yeah, I moved to his house, and I lived with him for like 2 to 3 years. And then I came back home when I started to like, you know, tour and do shows. And my parents are like, okay, we get it now. But my parents were still kind of confused when Do It Too came out, because they were like, what the fuck is happening? They didn't know what was going on.
Yeah.
But they were kind of confused about it, but, yeah.
What do your parents do now?
My dad's an electrician. So he works on like, power lines and like all the like big electricity, like, you know, in the streets and shit. Mm. And my mom works she's a manager at a restaurant at a hotel.
Yeah. It must be wild for them.
Yeah, bro. my parents are always calling me from their work. Hey, meet this friend that I have. Like, you know, they love me. They always listen to your music. And I'm like, all right, hey guys, how are you? I get these calls all the time. It's funny.
That's so good. I love that. I don't know who, I was listening to a podcast the other day. I don't know who it was. And it was literally like that. Like, their parents didn't like hated that they were like a comedian until they like got super famous. And then like, the mum was like the famous in that like town because her son was like super famous.
Yeah.
And you're just like, yeah, I can imagine it. It must be tough for parents, because especially like our age group, like for our parents growing up, there wasn't really like, you looked at like, there wasn't really any famous people apart from like rock stars and comedians really. And like sports stars. It wasn't like so readily available? Like, what was a DJ back then? It was nothing.
Well, see, this is kind of what I was saying earlier about my, you know, like older folks being naive and not being insecure about learning stuff. This is the one thing that I feel like my parents were like, it was unheard of. Like, even in their time, you're going to be a fucking musician. Well, most people don't make it, or they just, you know, they become a bum. Like, that's just how they thought of it. So like, they didn't want me to be an unsuccessful human being. So they thought like, hey, my dad's like, you need to come work for the power company and be, you know, do all this bullshit. I'm like, I tried it. Don't get me wrong. I tried work with him. It was fucking terrible. I'll never go back. I always call him. I'm like, how's that fucking hell job of yours? Fuck that. You know, like, but, yeah, man, it's cool to see my parents now. You know, they enjoy it. So that's all that really matters.
Yeah. That's the main thing. That is the main thing. It must be very weird for them. Definitely. Cause I think for me, like, my parents, they've always been like, I'm really fortunate. They've always been really supportive. Because I've literally just gone on about it since I was pretty much born. Like, since I was 9 years old, I wanted to be a DJ. So it was like,
wasn't being a DJ in London like pretty like common, like at the time they lived in?
Not really for them, because they, like, my mum's technically from or lived in London, but like where we live, they grew up around this area, so it was like very countryfied. Not American countryfied. It's like slightly different in the UK, but they're still like, so my mum's 61 and my dad's 60, so like them growing up, it was more like bands and stuff like that.
That's like my parents' age too.
Yeah, so I don't know what it, I think what it also was for them is like, especially my mum, she had a bit of a shit childhood, so her parents were just like shit parents and didn't support her in anything she did. So I think she was just like completely the opposite and kind of overcompensated and was like, do what the fuck you want. Like, go be happy, go do whatever you want to do, which I'm so fortunate. Like, I took my dad to Ibiza a couple months ago in the summer. Like, dad comes out touring with me as well. Which is, it's always good fun. It's definitely good fun.
It's always good, you know, having your folks like knowing that, you know, or having those experiences early, so that you don't have to go through them, and they're, you know, very supportive. That's really cool.
How does do you want kids?
I do. Eventually.
Yeah. Is that, have you thought about touring and having kids?
Yeah. Yeah. I think I have no time for anything else more in my life. You know what I mean? Like, whatever I have in my life right now, it's just like, that's it. No more time for anything else, you know? So
yeah, it's rough. Yeah. It's definitely, there comes a point where you just have to be selfish. Right. And you just have to be like, okay, I need to, for me anyway. And I'd like to tell me if you agree, but it's like, I just have to concentrate on my own self to like get it to a point where I'm comfortable with how it works and get it to a point where I know that it's, the foundations are so strong that this will last for a long time, and then I can worry about all personal stuff.
Yeah, I think it's just you'd be selfish to like add stuff to your life where if you don't have time for it, it's like, you know, like it's like getting a dog. And if you're never home, it's like, what kind of fucking life are you going to give a dog if you're not fucking home, you know?
Yeah. No, I agree.
It's the same thing.
I totally agree. Totally agree. I want to talk about that, going back from what you were saying after you released Do It To It and it blows up, and then the record after that. Although they're extremely successful, do you still feel like you have that pressure on you for like, what you're going to release next?
I think so. But I mean, it's not as like, it doesn't bother me as much anymore. Cause like, you know, once that kind of happens, like after I put out Believe, I put out a record called Take Me Away, which is, a record that I sampled Natasha Bedingfield's, old Pocketful Sunshine, I believe.
Yeah.
And it did pretty well. Like, there was a lot of DJs playing. It still is. You know, I think Adam Bayer's playing it still, which is really crazy because, like, I would never picture him playing that record ever. And I'm pretty sure he opens up with it with his one of his songs. I forget. It's a mashup that I think his name's Leighton
Giordano. Yeah.
Yeah, he's fire. So I think I met him at Tomorrowland. He was telling me how he made the edit for Adam, and he's been opening up with it. And I was just like, that's fucking crazy. And then I get tagged in it, you know, the next day. It was really cool. But after I put out that record, I kind of started to feel better because, like, you know, like I felt like I was like starting to get back in the groove of things. And then I released another record after, which was like a sample of Raquel's In a Dream. It was like an old freestyle song that was really big in like the US, which was cool. Like I liked that record a lot, but wasn't in love with it. But like my whole other team, they loved it so much that like it had to come out.
Yeah.
So it came out. if you get what I'm saying. So and then I just released a song called Heard It Like This, which is
it's a great record. I was listening to it before the jumping on with you. It's really fucking good. I like it a lot.
Thank you. I worked on that song for a while. I was opening up with it for a while during my Europe run this summer. And then I ended up wrapping it up like almost a month and a half ago.
Yeah.
So
were you like in on the creative with the artwork and everything? Cause I really like the artwork for it as well.
Yeah. I was in on everything. So that's what I was mentioning earlier. Like I was giving my team kind of the whole constructive and creative process. I was like, here's the artwork. Here's the photos. Here's like everything behind the song. And they were like, oh, we fucking love it. Let's put it out. Boom. It was very easy. So we ended up doing the artwork. It's actually my hand and my photographer's big ass hand.
Oh, is it touching really? The palm.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
I thought it was a chick's hand.
No, it's actually my hand and my photographer's hand.
It's great. It's a great photo.
Very good photo. I started that record, man. I really loved it because I sampled this this group. They're called Joey Vallis and Bray, which is they're like a very punk rock. If you ever listen to BC Boys, they're like, I kind of think they're better.
Yeah,
obviously. I really love their work, but I sampled one of their records, and they were like, "Yo, this is fucking insane!" And we ended up putting it out, so it was really cool.
That's cool, man. That's cool. And what have you got planned release wise for the rest of the year, or is that done for the rest of 2023?
I might take a swing because I think I have like over 15. Nah, that's a lot. I would say about like 10 techno records that I have sitting around. Oh, so sick. Yeah, so
send them over. Very,
yeah, I'll send them. I'll send them to you. They're really, really cool. It's like about like four of them are like really unfinished, but they're really, really fucking cool.
Yeah.
Just driving bass lines, really like really deep.
Yeah.
I'll send them over to you. You'd probably like them a lot. But I might just put out a techno EP before the year ends and just say fuck it.
Do it.
So I don't know, man.
Are you ever interested in having your own label?
I am.
Yeah.
We've been talking about it, trying to talk about a creative process behind it. I just feel like one thing I love about John right now is how he has his label, and like his label actually, like, I feel like when he puts an artist on, like, they actually gain something from the label.
Yeah.
Like, they gain a presence with his fan base, and like,
yeah,
it really kind of like helps pursue their career.
It's a proper record label, right?
Yeah.
It's what record labels used to be rather than what they are now.
I think eventually if I start a record label, like, I'm obviously going to do with under another, or have help from my record label kind of like invest into it.
Yeah.
So like, you know, whenever I do put out a record for someone else, like I want to build, either put them on shows with me or do something cool. Like where I'm like, I don't know, thinking about more than just the song itself and like kind of like helping them start where they need to go.
Yeah.
Or just like if they're, you know, even if an established artist, you know, just kind of like put money into something they want to do for that song. a music video, like just, I don't know. It could be anything. I just want to do more than just the song itself.
Yeah, it's I think it's about creating a really interesting community around the record label, and like, how can we release a record that then adds to you as an artist? Because you as a head of a record label, everything you release is kind of still going back to you at the end of the day. But it's like, how do you create something where the record label can kind of stand alone and everyone have a successful record from it? It's hard nowadays. It's really hard, especially with every DJ and their dog having a fucking record label and just releasing records left, right, and center.
Do you have your own record label or no?
Yeah, I have my, it's called All We Have Is Now. And I'm not doing anything different, but for me, it's like I found four or five artists that I love as people and as producers, and I just put out all their music and they come on tour with me as well. And they're like, they're small, like they started small. And for me, it's not about creating a sound of the label. It's like, go and be an artist, go and do what you want. Like, I've done label tours, but we're doing, or by the time this has come out, it's done. We've done a party in New York, which I'm not even on. It's like just an All We Have Is Now party. And that's the goal for me, is to build the label to a point where the label can just go and sell tickets with the label artists on, and it's just like does its own thing.
That's the goal.
Yeah,
that's the goal.
100%. You look at, like, let's say for instance, like Jamie Jones, like with what he's done with Hot Creations, but then what he's done with Paradise is like a brand set outside of Hot Creations, and you're just like, that's just the kind of the most genius way to build a career realistically and kind of have longevity, is like a brand that's not necessarily based around you headlining. It's kind of key.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, you know, I've always thought about doing like my own parties, which we've already planned a name and everything. We're probably going to do it sometime next year. But I think like you're saying, like it's cool if you can throw a label party and not have the, you know, like the actual artists who make it play.
Yeah.
And just like people that you really support just play it instead. And like, if it still does success, like that's when you know you have like a really good party, you know?
Yeah. I think it's also, it's like, not everything has to be massive now. Yeah. Like, and I think we live in this world where like, I get caught up in it, right? Like every show has to sell out, every show. And if you don't sell out, let's say for instance, the capacity is 1,000 cap venue and you sell 900 tickets, but you don't sell that 100 tickets, you haven't sold out your show, and everyone's like, well, you didn't fucking sell out. It's like, yeah, but the 900 people that went there still had the best time of their life, right? The promoters still made money and you still got paid. Everyone wins, right? Like, why, what is it about, like, there's so much pressure on artists to just like always sell out, always have the biggest thing here, biggest thing there. And like, for me is, yes, I get caught up in that a lot, but it's also like from the foundations, like where did it all start for us? And it started with us with our mates trying to sell tickets to a party. And that's for me with the label. It's like, okay, let's start really small. Let's like go to a second room in a club when they've got a headliner in the main room, and let's build a brand out of that, build a following out of a smaller room. Just make a fucking, but make sure that the party's wicked.
You know what it is? You know what I see now? Like, you're totally right. Like, people are too worried about the sellout, but it really doesn't matter if you sell it or not. If you honestly look at things from like a watcher's perspective online, you see two things, right? Like, you see people like selling out the Mirage, or you see people doing like boiler room shows.
Yeah.
The ones that like Sammy Virgie, or I forget his name, that just did one, or like a Fred Again.
Yeah.
These do like, these impact way harder than a selling out show like that sells 7,000 tickets.
Yeah.
If you're creating a vibe that's unbelievably, like, that's an experience rather than going to a show that's, you're smushed in the fucking crowd and like you're like a fucking sardine in a can.
Yeah.
It's not really an experience. It's a good show, don't get me wrong, but like, you're right. Like, I feel like for me, I want to do like smaller parties where you just like it, the vibe is just, it's just contagious. Like you want to go again. Like, I think like people are too worried about the numbers nowadays. Like it's, what do you actually like? Are you creating experience or are you just worried about like selling out your show and then just doing whatever?
Yeah. Which don't get me wrong. We're in the music business, right? We still have to make money. Right. But like, and I think there's that tough kind of conversation to have is like, how much money is enough money to keep going and to like I had Hannah Lang on a podcast and she obviously is fucking massive in the UK now. Like when she came on, she had just announced like a run of like 5 free shows for all of her fans, like in little cities in the UK. And she just on her hometown show, it's a 200 cap venue. She had 8,000 signups.
Wow.
Yeah. And you're just like, Jesus Christ. But like, it's cool that she's like doing really small shows still. And like, for me, there's actually more of a business sense to like create the foundations from doing that and like giving back to the community and creating like really intimate situations for your like super fans. Cause it's only your super fans that will come to those because they're the ones like literally waiting when they go on like to sign up for, like they're the ones that are there straight away. So it's like, how do you give back to the community and how do you also like keep that growing by not just like worrying about the massive, massive shows? I don't know. It's weird. It's a catch 22, right?
Yeah. I mean, I even thought about doing that like for next year, like doing free shows. Like, so kind of like how you were talking about Hannah, we did the same thing for New York. Yeah. EZU got canceled. And it was the first day it got canceled. And we found out like very early on in the morning. And it was like, I think like 9 or 10, probably like 10 o'clock. And my manager, he's like, is it really canceled? He's on the phone with my agent. I'm like, fuck, dude. Like, I'm thinking in my head, like, all right, this is about to get canceled. There's probably hundreds, thousands of people in New York trying to party right now.
Yeah.
They don't even know it's about to get canceled. So they get off the phone. I was like, listen, I know it's about to get canceled. We need to find a venue right now. Like, get on your phone, go fucking hit up some promoters. We already know it's canceled. Let's find a venue. Let's get something set up. So then we ended up finding some venues. I posted about it on Instagram and just went fucking bananas. And then like we ended up posting about the show, sold out in 2 seconds.
Yeah,
it was like 2,000 signups and like it oversold. So we had to resell people back the money or we had to refund people the money. And then like people were pissed. So I was like, fuck it. Like I actually told my manager, I was like, I don't even want the money. Like, let's all do free shows. It's going to be a free show. So then we did the first show. And then the second show we did with Mal P, which was like a co-headline we did together. And that sold out in fucking seconds too. And then we did a final show. The final show I ended up getting like, it was like 12,000 pre-saves.
Jesus,
it was it was insane. And then we ended up selling it out in like fucking no time. But doing free stuff for like the fans, I think like that's something that I saw, like, you know, even every show was free.
Yeah.
And like, you know, everyone was DMing me saying how this is the most special thing that anyone's done for them in New York, yada, yada, yada. So like in my head, I'm like, man, next year I want to try and do like a fucking more intimate show, like a 1,000 cap free show. For any city, like I might give away, you know, do something so where like people can come see me if they haven't seen me, if they don't have the money, they can just fucking just come either way and just if they get lucky with an RSVP, then they come to the show, you know?
Yeah, so there's something really cool about it. And I think also in a situation where you're at where you sell crazy tickets, it's like you don't need to worry about not selling out because you sell out pretty much everywhere you go anyway. So it's like, okay, let's do 2 nights in one city and you do your big like sellout show and then you also then do a free show the day after once it's sold out or something like that. And you only announce it once it's sold out. Could be really cool.
Yeah. That'd be interesting. I might do that next year sometime. We'll see how things go.
Yeah. Cause I think it's also like, how do you make my goal in my career is how do I make super fans? And it's like, the super fans literally come to every single show when you're in their city, or they travel to come and see you, and then they'll buy all your merch, they listen to all your music, and they bring friends to that, to your shows. Like, they're the super fans. And it's like, how do you give back to them? Because there is a level of, like, I know it's like give and take, right? It's like you're making the music that they like, so they're getting involved. But tickets are expensive nowadays. Some of these kids are like spending a lot of money to see us on regular occasions. And it's like, how do we give back? It's super important, I think.
I think just giving away shit. People love free stuff, man. And as artists, like, that's like our only way of, you know, kind of giving back, or whether it's like free bootlegs or whatever, you know what it is.
Yeah.
So
what's your plans for 2024, man?
Hopefully, we'll see.
I'm holding you to it, man. You have to do it. You said it on here, so you got to do it.
Oh, fuck. But yeah, hopefully just, you know, just keep releasing stuff that I'm in love with, man. And just, I want to build more of an experience at my shows. I think that's like my biggest thing too. So
how are you going to do that?
Production, just giving stuff to fans, like, you know, whether it's like free merch or like, just, you know, just like, me going to visit fans at their house or something, like, you know, build an experience, something like, you know, things I have never done before. And just giving back. I think, you know, we as artists, you know, we do so many shows in one city, you know, we have to like sort of like kind of do something special for one or two people. It could, you know, could be life changing for them. So I think just like, you know, having those experiences with people is something that I want to do next year. But also like hopefully release my branded party, maybe start a label next year. Not sure if I'll do that. I'm probably gonna wait until maybe I release an album.
Yeah,
to do that.
You should release the album on your label.
That's interesting. Yeah, I think my manager had mentioned something like that once before.
Like a great way to launch the label.
Yeah,
obviously it's going to be a side shoot from the major that you signed to, because it has to be, right? So like, it's a good way to kind of keep consistency, also build a brand for yourself.
Yeah, I also think like if I ever have, or whenever I have like another do it to it, let's just say, like, you know, in quotation, that could be like a, you know, a new start. You know, I just put it right on the label.
Yeah,
just be like, hey, this is it. You know, this is the start. So yeah, I mean, those things are probably pretty much it. And just the only thing I really want to do right now is finish my studio so I can get back to work.
How often do you spend time in the studio? Is it like a regular, are you like a daily studio? Or is it just when you're in the mood? Obviously when you've got time as well.
I think like, you know, there's a lot of people that say, you know, I don't really have motivation to go into the studio, or if I don't have creativity today, like my brain's not working. I always find a way to find some way to work, whether it's like, if I can't make music, I'm going to look for samples. I'm going to look for things that I could use potentially tomorrow.
Yeah.
Whether it's like, look for samples, like, you know, drum samples, or like if I always get inspired by buying a new synth, but like, that's rare. I can't always buy a new synth every day. My business manager is going to kill me. But, or just like going on Splice, or like buying new presets for like Serum, or like Diva, you know, or just like, I don't know, just like kind of doing stuff outside of actually constructing an actual song, you know?
Studio admin, I call it.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like creating tools so that when you are in the mood to make music, you've got all the tools at your fingertips. That's like new and kind of giving you fresh ideas.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's always something to work on, you know, whether it's like, just like if you're like working on content ideas, just writing ideas down.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty much how I do things. I'm always like trying to keep my head in an emotion of working, you know, like a consistency of things.
No, I like that, man. I like it. Dude, I love talking to you. Thank you so much for coming on here. For those people that don't know who you are and don't follow you, then you've been sitting under a rock for the last couple of years. But how can people follow you? How can people get involved with your project?
Follow me on all socials at @craze or @craze.
Sick, dude, thanks for coming on, man. I really appreciate it.
Appreciate you, Will. Thank you, man.
Keep safe. See you soon.
Hey, you too, man. Take it easy.
And that's a wrap. Big love to everybody for coming on. Thanks for listening. Give us a subscribe. Give us a review. Share it with your mates. Share it with your family, whoever you think will like it. And I will see you same time next time. Big love.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to Quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.